good.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to this week's segment of Live Without Limits. Today's show is about how education builds your self-confidence in life. And let's remember, self-confidence is built on our ability to believe in ourselves and our abilities. And a lot of this comes from our self-esteem, how we value ourselves, different situations like that. And what I would like to do is also take this opportunity to read you something that I got in recently, because this article kind of tells you how to build self-confidence, especially when you are in the workplace. For instance, when you have a job and there is a meeting, sometimes you may not be the main character. You may not be the one that they're looking for. But guess what? If you have a good idea and it works, then guess what? As you build your self-confidence, then you feel more secure in your ability to do the things that you really want to do. So think about these things and think about how you can benefit from an education. For instance, many times when we think of education, we often think about how when we're in school, when we're younger, that we don't really want the education, that we can do things without it. But guess what? That education gives you the ability to make decisions and understand how important decisions are made. And so many times, a lot of these things happen simply because when you say something and you're encouraged to say something and people begin to believe in you, then it opens up a lot of avenues for you that you don't always think about. And what I want to do is read you an idea. And it says, how to become an idea person, a strategy for making yourself invaluable and rich. And the reason I want to read this to you is because this shows how you may not be the main decision maker, but you may have good ideas, and your ideas can help, whether it's your own business or the company you're working with. And as your ideas grow and as you build your self-confidence, then you have the ability to do the things that you really want to do. Okay, there were 8 of us in the room. Jerry, the CEO, 5 of his VPs, Bernadette, Jerry's personal assistant, and me. We are here to solve a problem, Jerry told the group. The advertising campaign that has paid all our salaries these past 3 years has stopped working. Response rates are going down by 30%, and the average order is down too. If we were making big margins, we could take a few months to solve this problem, but we have a 10% profit business. That means I need some good ideas, no great ideas, and today. Jerry was, as you can see, blunt, but he was right about 2 things. When a business has a small profit margin, his making about $500,000 on a $5 million in sales, it can't sustain a prolonged period of weak marketing results. And when a marketing campaign stops working, good ideas won't fix it. You need great ideas. A sense of urgency permeated the conversation. Everyone knew his job was on the line. I've invited Michael to help us drum up some new ideas, Jerry said, to help us think outside the box. I started the brainstorming session by asking why the original strategy had stopped working. I wasn't really interested in their ideas at that point. I wanted to see how this group interacted. Who was the idea people? Who were the cheerleaders? Who were the naysayers, etc.? Every business has its own personality. Some are open and non-hierarchical. Others are closed or traditional. Whatever the culture, there are unspoken rules about who is allowed to come up with ideas and when. After listening to the executives talk for less than 5 minutes, I could see that in Jerry's business, the atmosphere was informal, but only two people were allowed to make the suggestions, Jerry or Lewis, one of the VPs. Everyone else played a support position. I knew that this was a big problem, but I also knew that confronting Jerry about it was not the solution. Instead, I used a protocol I often use to break up invisible corporate power structures. I announced that from that point forward, I would ask them questions, but then couldn't discuss them. They could simply write their answers down on index cards and hand them to me, and then I would read those answers out loud without saying who had written them. I asked about all sorts of things, from changing the name of the product to changing its USP to using celebrity endorsements, etc. During the first hour or so, I noticed several things. The first thing I noticed was that Jerry and Lewis came up with the best ideas, but their ideas were versions of ideas the company had been using for 3 years. None of them would make a significant difference in their marketing results. The other thing I noticed was that the answers from the other participants ranged from not so good to terrible. At first, the worst ideas came, not surprising, from Bernadette, who had no experience marketing. But the ideas of the disenfranchised group started getting better, while the ideas generated by Jerry and Louis stayed pretty much the same. By breaking down the old power structure, we were able to get some exciting new ideas up on the board. Initially, Jerry and Lewis had a tough time accepting the possibility that other people could come up with anything worthwhile. But as the session went on and we started refining the new ideas, everyone became more excited about the genuine prospect of turning the business around. The apprehension that was dominant at the beginning of the meeting was replaced by optimism and eagerness. At the end of the day, we reviewed all of the ideas that we liked, took a vote, and came up with three that we thought would make the biggest difference. One of them had to do with media placement. Another had to do with pricing. And the third was an idea about product guarantee. All three had originally come from Bernadette. When I pointed that out, everyone was amazed, Bernadette most of all. I never thought of myself as an idea person, she said. Well, you'll have to change the way you think, won't you? I replied. Jerry tested Bernadette's ideas the following month. Two of the three worked very well. Their advertising resumed its former power, and the business actually increased its profit margin that year. More important, Bernadette was soon promoted to marketing assistant, and 3 years later, she was making six figures as a marketing VP. This little story illustrates the three observations I have made about idea generators and the roles you play in entrepreneurial business. In every company, there is an invisible culture that separates the idea generators from anyone else. When it comes to ideas, Pareto's Law rules. The idea generators represent fewer than 20% of a company's employees, and yet they generate more than 80% of the ideas. The idea generators make much more money than the average employee. I don't have any figures on this, but my guess is that they make between 2 and 10 times the average salary. The conclusion, if you are not an idea generator in your company now, become one. You will have more fun, you will enjoy more power, and you will make more money, lots more money. If you are thinking, gee, I can't do that, I'm not the creative type, remember Bernadette. Neither of the two great ideas that Bernadette came up with was creative in the traditional sense. One was, what would happen if we raised the price? The other was, do you think we can sell this to doctors and dentists? The point is that many of the best ideas are not clever. They are obvious ideas that, for whatever reason, no one has thought of or dared to suggest before. Also, notice that Bernadette's ideas were posed as questions. Great ideas don't have to be pronouncements for marketing mavens or Mount Olympus. They can just as well be questions from ordinary people who are looking at the business with fresh eyes. Two of the best idea generators I ever worked with understood this. Jay Abraham was one of them. I can't remember the last name of the other guy, but let's call him Ted Stevens. Jay and Ted had similar methods. When asked to come up with ideas, they began by asking all sorts of fundamental questions. Questions like, why are you selling this investment publication to investors? And why do you think the people in debt don't have a lot of money in the bank? You think there'd be no need to ask such questions, that the answers are self-evident. But Jay and Ted understood the principle just mentioned, that many of the best ideas are the most obvious. They knew, too, that in most business cultures, the simplest questions are never asked because the idea generators in power have already decided they are stupid. Another thing might ask, for example, why don't you try to sell your investment publications to the house buyers? And if you'd say that you'd already tried that, they just moved to the next question. They didn't try to argue their point. They felt free to keep the conversation moving. Think about Bernadette. She didn't consider herself to be a creative person. Therefore, she wasn't hampered by any sort of ego attachment. She posed her ideas as questions, and if they weren't accepted, it didn't bother her. When it turned out that she had come up with three best ideas that day, she was thrilled, but she didn't expect it. That's the mentality of a great idea generator. He sees the process itself as fun. A successful outcome is great, but it's a bonus. And one of the reasons I wanted to read this to you was that it shows you that when it comes to education, when it comes to the things that we desperately understand and want, then guess what? You will always be unique and different in the marketplace. And it is important to understand that when it comes to working in the marketplace, guess what? It is important for you to recognize the importance of your education. At one time, especially when this country was being founded, you didn't need an education because you were farmers. But at the same time, you still needed to understand how to run a business, because running a farm was a business. It wasn't just growing the crop and selling the crops. It's knowing how much land you were using to plant on, what types of crops work best in what type of soil, what types of, you know, that when you use certain crops, you would use certain nutrients, and you had to change where what you were planting from one year to the next in that particular area because your ground had different nutrients and it had to be replenished from year to year. So it's understanding these things and being able to read. And all of these things was what was necessary. And even though we may not realize it, history plays an important part of what we and how we look at business today. Because when you look, I mean, yes, we have more of a technological way that business is being done, but at the same time, if we hadn't had what went on previously, and here's an example of the importance of education, because when you think about it, how has technology changed over the years? How has it allowed you to give you more free time? For instance, you know, just think about a profession. 30, 40 years ago, you worked in an office from 9 to 5. Today, with the use of technology, you can work from home for a business that may even be across the country. For instance, I was living in an apartment complex, and I met a couple that moved in. He worked for IT in the company that where they came from. Her company transferred her to Atlanta, Georgia. So they were living across the street from where she worked. But he was still working because a lot of his work was done through the internet on his computer. And when you think about these things, how has technology influenced where you are today with business? And also, just think about it. That same person who was a secretary in an office today works from home as a virtual assistant. And understanding where your niche is, what your specialty is, because each people have a specialty in different areas. How are you going to benefit from that? How are you going to use that knowledge to benefit other people? So think about it. We're talking about how when you present yourself, you may be insecure when you first present something, but the more you present it, the more self-confidence you have. And the more that you're encouraged because your ideas have been used, then the more your ideas you can come up with. But you have to be aware just how all of this plays together. And when you look at the job market today, it is totally changing. The problem is people are looking for jobs in the same way they did 25 years ago. They would write out their resume. They would write the dates that they worked somewhere. They would give a description of the things they did with that company. But no one thought of, how did I help solve a problem in this company that I can use to help solve a problem with the company that I'm working with today? So how are all of these things going to play together? How are we going to work together? Where is everything going to be? So remember, what we want to do is help you understand that your formal education may be over, but in essence, it's not really over. For instance, even today, I take part in telesummits. I don't have to go out and be there. I don't have to pay the money. I'm taking free. And yes, at the same time, they're giving you an overview of what they want to sell to you, and which will be in more detail. But everyone is, if you think about it, everyone is always saying the same thing, but they may have a different story attached to it. Every professional speaker, especially if they want, they're a motivational speaker, think about Zig Ziglar, think about Tony Robbins. When you think about the points they're making, they're all making the same points of what it takes to get from where you are to what you want to be. But each one of them have different stories of different experiences that they did to get from point A to point B and what worked for them. But remember, what worked for them may not work for you, so you have to be creative and you have to be innovative. So when you have a formal education, then when you present yourself initially, you come across in one way. But once you get to work in a corporation, then it's the hierarchy. And how are you going to break the glass ceiling and put yourself where you want to be within that company? So all of these things are always playing together and working together. So let's look at some of the things that we can do that can help you. For instance, you know, when you think about it, kids today, they are far advanced than children at the same age 25, 30 years ago. Why? Because you have access to the internet. You can research on the internet. And you have access to more books and things that are available, because what's available in one place may not be available somewhere else. So it's all playing together. And think about it. When you are looking for the importance of an education, remember what you want to do. And even in the acting profession, that you have certain skills, but at the same time, just being in front of the camera, just being funny, just being able to learn the dialogue, just being able to emote a feeling when it's supposed to, that's not going to make your career long-term. And you have your ups and you have your downs in a career. But those who have sustained the longest career have been multifaceted. They've been able to go behind the camera. They've been able to produce. They've been able to direct. And then when the opportunity arose, then they went in front of the camera. But it's understanding how you can learn your skill and really build on it. And think about all the people you know that have been successful in life. What did they do to achieve their success? Because believe me, they may have finished their formal education, but they were innovative, and they put themselves around successful people, and they watched them. They learned what they did to become successful. And then once they learned what made them successful, then guess what? They were able to do the things to help themselves become successful. So when you think about all of these things, think about how you can do what it will take that can help you get where it is that you really and truly want to be in the future. Think about all of the things that you can do that can help you build your experience, and think about all of the things that you can do that can really help you become what it is that you really want to do, and think about how you can build and your experience and your knowledge. Today, technology has helped us. Think about it. When, especially years ago, before you even had the basic things like calculators, and you had to work numbers in your head, unless you were very good at reasoning, then you may not have shown what your true abilities were long-term. But if you understood where all of these things came from, if you understood how to use the things that can really put you exactly where you want to be and put you exactly into that place that you want to be, then guess what? You will always bring an experience that can benefit you. And, you know, we talk about the importance of education, but so many times people forget that education is long-term, and it's understanding how to utilize all this long-term experience and really make it all work for you and put you exactly where you want to be in the workplace, in your experience. When you start a business, people often don't always think about how to utilize what it is that you need to do that's going to put you exactly where you want to be. Education, for instance, you have your formal year of 12 years, which is high school. Then you can go to college for another 4 years, and you specialize in a specific field. Well, based on that, that's a preconceived condition that others have about you and your ability. So then once you get into the workplace, you have to prove yourself. And today, remember, and today we've moved back to the small businessman. There's no such thing as a job with a corporation where you're going to start at the bottom and work your way up anymore. Those jobs are gone. So how can you be creative? The thing is, when we get our formal education, our 12 years or even our 16 years of education, then guess what? They have taught us to conform to what society expects of us and what society wants us to do. But often those are not where you need to be. You need to be acknowledging what it is that your expectations are in the job market, where it is that you expect to be in the job market, how you are going to influence the job market. The thing is that when you get in school, they tell you, go to work for the corporation. You'll be there long, because they've not taught you that the marketplace has changed. Economics has changed. Recently, customer service is a big thing with companies. And I had to talk to T-Mobile about payments. And I called and to talk to a customer service representative. I was on the phone for an hour and a half and got no answer. Several times I was on the phone and I left it on waiting for them and got no answer. And I finally decided I'm going to go into the store. And when I went into the store, he was saying that because of what's happening in Washington, that they are making these companies bring back the jobs into this country, so that what's happening is that in the transitioning, they haven't hired enough people or got them trained fast enough that you're going to be waiting for hours. You can be waiting for a couple of hours. So it's this is happening with all the companies. So being aware of that, understanding what is going on in today's marketplace and how to adapt to it. Because these are companies that depend on customer service to keep their customers. For instance, AT&T was the sole marketer and had a sole contract with Apple to sell the iPhone. Now, Apple is developing a contract with Verizon to also sell the iPhone. And now AT&T is going to have to make sure that they offer good service to the customer. They're going to have to be competitive in price. There's so many things that when you have an exclusive, you can do what you want and you can say tough love. You're either going to pay for it or you go somewhere else and you'll have access to this equipment. But once they have competition, they can't do this. So think about these things. Think about how important your knowledge and your adaptability are. And with a formal education, you're able to be adaptive. And you have to relearn how to be creative. Because as a child, we often think the world is open to us and we have the opportunity to do anything and everything that we want to do. And then in school, it becomes teamwork and conformity. And the person who doesn't conform becomes the person that is ostracized and laughed at because they're different. So there's things that we can incorporate. There's things that we don't incorporate. But it's also being aware of how are you going to do the things that can really benefit you and put you in that avenue of what it is that you want to achieve in the long run. And I want to remind you, you can go to my website, and that is onepersonalcareercoach.com, and you can sign up for group coaching or individual coaching, because coaching is mentoring someone and helping them get from where they are to where they want to be and helping them get their business and learning how to be creative and becoming who it is that they really want to be in the future. And I would like to remind you, you can come back next week and we will have a guest speaker.